The following program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or WFED. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. WFED does not endorse or take responsibility for those statements or opinions. Federal News Radio accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy or errors in admissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, AM 1050. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what is good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. My in-house guest today is David Powell of the Federal Business Council. David?
Good morning, Mark.
How you doing?
Good. Great. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, anytime. Tell us a little bit about FBC, then we'll go over the news a bit here.
Sure. For those of you that don't know who FBC is, we're a company that brings together the two sides of the marketplace, the industry side and the government side, via events, conferences, and a variety of other online tools. And I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, Mark, but
we'll be touching that.
We can touch on that
after,
as we go through.
Yeah, after our little news thing here. GAO apparently wants more action on the Board of Contract Appeals. Apparently, there's a lot of protests coming down. I don't know. I haven't heard a radical increase in protests. Have you heard anything?
No, but I've always wondered how that results in more business for you down the road. But.
Well, I mean, it gives us more talk time if there's a juicy protest, I guess. Westwood Computer, one of the standards in the 8A universe for a number of years and a stalwart on the GSA schedule, is rebranding itself as EMTEC Federal, EMTEC Federal.
It's an interesting change, Mark. And we've seen that before in the marketplace. But I'm sure they know what they're doing. But you have to take a look at all the brand equity that they built in the old name.
Yeah,
what's
going
to happen to that?
Exactly. I hope they know what they're doing, because Westwood Computer is a name that's been around for a very long time. A lot of customers know it. A lot of vendors know it. A lot of manufacturers know it. And apparently they have a parent company that I didn't know about. And they're just changing the name to reflect that. Dell also is getting into the Small Business Act. Apparently they have ties with a number of small businesses in an article from the March 12 Wash Tech.
If anyone can do it, Dell can, Mark.
Well, you know, they have the product, they have the marketing dollars. It'd be interesting to see if they spend marketing dollars with their partners, because it would behoove them if they're going to use that channel to help fund it.
It's a nice move, though. I think it'll work out.
Yeah. And Michael Hardy did an online forum a couple weeks ago on changing NAICS codes, NAICS code shopping. And you can find his the transcripts from the forum at WashingtonTechnology.com. But that's in part, we talked to Michael a week or so back on the ITES 4A or 2H contract. And I don't know if you want to comment on that or not.
Just the rest of us out here are still trying to figure out what our NAICS code is.
And now
we're going to change it.
There's a lot of them. And if I can convince a contracting officer to put it in a NAICS code that lets me win, hey, what the heck? Let's chat a little bit here about your end of the university events. Coming up, we have April 12th, Outlook from Federal Sources, fedsources.com. That's the big IT budget conference. On April 19th, your next biggie, I guess, or I don't know, you have a biggie every week, but the OSDBU conference.
It's a biggie coming up, you're
and
right.
17 years?
It's the 17th.
Let's hit that for a second here.
Sure,
Who you got coming?
Well, we have about 47 different agencies coming, and that will be represented. And when I say represented, they're actually intimately involved with the development of the event. So they've helped us develop the content. It's a fantastic event. There's procurement matchmaking that happens. The entire event is wrapped around getting more business to the small businesses out there. So if you're a small business and you're looking for government contracts and need some direction on how to go about that, this is the absolute place that you have to be on April 19th.
Right, and you can meet, there's a big exhibit hall, and there's integrators in there, lots of small businesses, agencies, so there's a lot of things going on besides the matchmaking.
Right, the exhibits are fantastic for finding teaming partners, creating new business opportunities. I call this a reverse trade show because the government is actually the exhibitor in a lot of these locations. So the attendee, the small business person or the small business liaison for the large companies are looking for people to do business with. It's a great event. I've gotten tremendous feedback. The people that are involved tell us that this is the number one event for small businesses in the country and the government all year.
There you go. FBCINC.com/OSDBU for the April 19th OSDBU conference, 17th year.
Are your listeners going to have a chance to see you there this year?
At the OSDBU? I'll definitely be there. Yes, indeed. I'll be exhibiting and we'll see if we'll be doing anything else, but definitely be on the show floor. May 9 and 10, we have GovSec back at the convention center, govsecinfo.com. Can't say I like their web address, but the show's pretty good. May 15th through 17, the GSA Expo, expo.gsa.gov. June 3 to 5, ACT, the Management of Change Conference. That always sells out. And there's a small business veteran conference out in Vegas later in June, June 25 through 28. If you want information on these, go to my website, federaldirect.com, and look at the current newsletter, and the dates and the web addresses are there. David, FBC is known largely for the tabletops, but the last 3 or 4 years, that's really changed a lot. Why?
Well, we've really branched off into doing more federal conferences, and these are agency-driven conferences across the country. And we've been looking for events that have meaning in the marketplace. And you just rattled off a number of events. As everybody knows, you could wake up tomorrow and take your pick of multiple events to go through in this area and across the country. So there's always something to do with an event. We are looking for to produce events that have meaning in the marketplace. And by meaning, there needs to be value on both sides of the equation for the industry exhibitor and participant, and then also for the federal attendee who's going to be there. So the content usually drives the decision on that side. But the events that we're looking for and the our trend at this point is to produce more and more conferences, and we'll do about 60 to 70 conferences this year, in addition to our 150 on-site shows that a lot of people know us for.
Okay, you have technology-specific conferences like FIAC, the Information Assurance Conference, and FISC,
correct,
the Information Security Conference. Mm-hmm. But you also do agency-specific events. FIAC and FISC cut across all federal agencies. But tell me a little bit about one of the agency-specific CIO level events, please.
Well, we just got back from Dallas, Texas. The FAA had their national IT and security conference in Dallas. And if the FAA is your marketplace and you sell technology to them, that's a place where you needed to be. And from what I could tell, most of the people who were interested in reaching the FAA were there. It was a fantastic conference. A lot of people got really solid results from that event. So, that's one event, and the unique characteristics of that are that it's an agency-driven content. It's not fabricated. There's real reason to be there, and there's context for the exhibitors. There's content for the attendees. Everyone leaves happy.
Okay, so you can find this information at fbcinc.com. Let's chat a bit about what you referenced earlier. You can in D.C. and most cities and probably most industries, but especially the government market, you could spend your life outside of the office at all of these venues. And I get calls and emails on a regular basis asking about certain providers. And a lot of these events don't seem to deliver much of anything other than eating your time and your money, and in some instances, an extraordinary amount of your money. So let's talk about the criteria people should develop for selecting the events they attend. You and I have always agreed that pedigree of the producer is number one. Talk about that for a sec.
But I think when we talk about pedigree, we always discuss the length of time in the marketplace, how much experience does the provider have in selecting events, the depth of their relationships with the people that they work with on the government side, and basically their ability to pull off a meaningful event based on their experience level and recognition in the marketplace. So I think pedigree is extremely important. I think even more important than pedigree, we have to go into the actual event. The meaning for the event itself has to be mission driven, has to have some context to the mission of the agency, and for the most part, the agency itself should be the driver of the event. Okay. So those are two. I mean, pedigree is very important because we need to make sure that it's a solid producer. The event itself has to have meaning. And when that has meaning and the event is strong in and of itself, then the rest of it comes together.
Right. But I mean, you and I have both seen the events where you go to the website and it lists, you know, either invited speakers, asterisks, hadn't accepted yet, or lists speakers as coming. And then when you call these people, government people, they say, you know, they don't even know who the event producer is, much less have this on their calendar.
Right, well, look at why there are named speakers in a large event. What's the reason for that? Any thoughts?
The draw, yeah.
I mean, to draw. Sure. The agency-driven event, though, the draw is the event itself. The agency
right.
personnel go to the event because they're supposed to go to the event. So there's reason for them to be there. That's okay. The key differentiator.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we are going to pursue this, but we're going to bring on Stan Soloway of the Professional Services Council, who his group does some events, usually just for their members, but right now you are listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio AM 1050, and we'll return after these messages.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. Starting a new career can be exciting, but it can also be a little overwhelming at times. You have a new routine to get used to, new people to work with, and basically an entirely new lifestyle to adopt. But GEICO wants to make things easier for you. That's why they're sponsoring a program with the Council for Excellence in Government, which created a website for new young federal employees. Youngfeds.org will give these employees a place to connect, and events and forums will give them the opportunity to develop themselves professionally. But GEICO didn't stop there. You see, the government helped GEICO get its start, and now GEICO wants to help return the favor. That's why they offer additional discounts to many federal employees on top of their already low rates. To find out if you can save even more on your auto insurance, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
You could search endlessly looking for government benefits, or go to govbenefits.gov and discover government your way. Veterans benefits, Social Security, job training, loans. We help you find your government benefits fast, online, 24/7. Govbenefits.gov, one place to search for the information you need. Open the door to your benefit connection with govbenefits.gov.
A message from the U.S. Department of Labor.
Do you have an immediate plan of action to survive a criminal attack, terrorism incident, or major natural or man-made disaster? In today's unsafe world, you must take personal responsibility for your safety, security, and emergency preparedness. You can't rely on just dialing 911 and waiting for police and fire personnel to respond. Whether it's an automobile accident, home invasion, workplace violence, fire, terrorism, robbery, carjacking, or even natural disasters such as tornadoes or floods, you must have a quality plan of action in place before disaster strikes. Alfred McCumber, a veteran law enforcement and dignitary protection agent who has guarded some of the most famous and high-profile people from around the world, becomes your personal bodyguard on Federal News Radio AM 1050 with the Code Red Show. Code Red features in-depth interviews with the most knowledgeable and experienced high-level government officials from Homeland Security, law enforcement, fire and rescue, and emergency preparedness, as well as private sector safety and security professionals to keep you safe and prepared for emergencies that can strike at any time, any place. Wednesday afternoons at 1 on Federal News Radio AM 1050.
We're back on Federal News Radio, AM 1050. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center, and David's my first guest, is Stan Soloway of the Professional Services Council. Stan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
And I really appreciate your time because I know how hard it is to get on your schedule. Tell us, first of all, our sort of theme today is events and venues where people really need to be able to get out there and network. So tell us a little bit about PSC and how it fits in the scheme of things here.
Well, PSC is the premier and largest association of companies that provide services of all kinds to the federal government. So we have well over 200 member companies and growing, and they provide services of just about every kind imaginable, and they are companies of every size imaginable, all the way from very small startups to the very large multinational corporations that are household names.
Okay.
And our role really is principally to be the voice of the government services sector, and so we are principally an advocate. Which also involves not only direct advocacy, but an awful lot of analysis and market research and insight and so forth, as well as a forum for the industry to meet and gather. And so we have events and programming all throughout the year that bring different elements of the industry together, whether it's with senior government officials or with industry peers or what have you. So it's a pretty full agenda of activity.
Okay. What types of events are you talking about here? What kind of venues do you create for your members?
We do a variety of things. It's everything from routine committee meetings. We have a monthly meeting on government policy issues that's attended by anywhere from 20 to 50 companies, up to an annual CEO forum, which is a small discussion amongst a group of maybe 20 or 25 top CEOs, just for them, a tailored discussion, to our annual conference, which will pull in 250 people from across the industry, as well as most major government customers, where we really have a significant discussion about the business of the business. It's our annual conference, unlike other organizations, involves no PSC business. It's all focused on the marketplace and the industry, so it's a great place for both substance and networking. So there's a variety of things. We do dialogue luncheons with very senior government officials. Senator Lieberman spoke to our group last week. So we do a lot of that kind of thing as well.
Okay, now you're primarily preaching to the choir here. I mean, your events are exclusively for your members, is that correct?
Some are exclusively for members, others are open to guests. It varies, but our public luncheons, like the dialogue luncheons and so forth, are open to non-members, although there obviously are different fee structures for them.
Okay.
But there's a real benefit. The benefit in that environment, in terms of desire to get out and meet people in the industry and meet peers and network and so forth, the real benefit I think that we offer that probably isn't available elsewhere, though this is not meant as a sales pitch, is number one, we do it at a variety of levels throughout the company. So we have everybody from sort of operational folks, business development, contracts, and legal, up through the CEO suite. And second, it's a place where you're going to meet people from across the industry. It's not just IT, it's not just engineering, it's not just O&M, it's not just consulting. It's people doing all kinds of really interesting work. So when we look at my executive committee, for instance, we have a CEO of a company that's one of the leading international development firms in the world, as well as a CEO of a leading logistics firm, a CEO of a leading IT firm, CEO of a leading social sciences firm. So there's real interesting variety in the membership, which I think adds to the value intellectually as well as understanding what's going on.
Yeah, a lot of people don't seem to get it that there is a world beyond the IT. IT services and IT products are certainly huge, and they're pervasive through all segments at this point, but there's a lot of services beyond.
Yeah, well, you know, the professional services, as defined in the government databases, is by far the dominant marketplace now. It's the last 5 years or 3 years, 40% of the growth has been in professional services. And professional services today is a much broader term than ever before. It used to be people would think of it as consulting firms. Today it is all kinds of capabilities. There's an awful lot of technology embedded in professional services. And it's firms that do everything from teaching farmers to grow crops other than poppies in Afghanistan, to doing healthcare systems, to doing engineering, to doing logistics and so forth.
Yeah, the crops in Afghanistan and some perhaps in South America could use some shape-shifting, however you want to address it. Now, you did an article recently. You do an article regularly in Washington Technology, but you did one recently on the outsourcing issue that was brought up in the New York Times. What was the thrust of that piece, please?
Well, the New York Times had a very large piece, and they'd spent a fair amount of time talking to us and I think tried to balance the piece somewhat. It was about a month or so ago in a Sunday paper, a large front-page story. And my concern was that while I thought it was really important given the central role industry now plays in helping government function, thought it was very important that the popular press begin to really understand more about this relationship, and therefore thought it was a good thing that the New York Times was focusing. I was concerned that their context was way off. They had some basic facts right, but they were completely unconstrained by context. For example, they talked about this rather shocking fact that they said that almost half of all contract actions were non-competitive. And the question I posed was, all contract actions, by definition, involves modifications to existing contracts, options on existing contracts, and so forth. And so to say almost half are non-competitive really doesn't mean much.
Correct.
Because in the services space, which is 70% or 65% of the market, more than half of contract actions are modifications to existing contracts or options, which are non-competitive by definition. So what does the 48% figure really mean? Similarly, they talked about the expense of contractors and how one company was billing $200,000 a year for a professional that the government would pay $100,000 a year. Now, leaving aside for a second the fact that $100,000 a year salary doesn't include retirement benefits and health care and other added costs.
Office space.
Office space and overhead and so forth. One of the things that I think is really critical here is to recognize that it's not a question of industry charging too much. It's that the government perhaps undervaluing people. That the marketplace that the government's competing in today is a very broad, it's not just government contractors, it's the broad commercial marketplace for a limited talent pool. Every HR executive will tell you that we have a shortfall of talent in America. This is a big issue. And the marketplace is driving demand and is driving price. And so to the extent the government is failing to keep pace, it doesn't mean they're being charged too much on the outside. It may mean more so that they're undervaluing people from the inside. And I think the New York Times completely missed that point. The final point was there seems to be this general perception that we've experienced this headlong, unconstrained rush into outsourcing. And while there has been a very significant increase, and I was part of that when I was in the Clinton administration and when it really took off, and you really see it, you know, leading up to Y2K was really when it took off, while there's no question there's been a significant growth and that this is the face of the future of government, it hasn't been quite as unconstrained and wild as people think. In fact, even though, as the New York Times pointed out, there's been nearly a doubling, about an 80% increase in contracting for services over the last 5 years, during that same period of time, the federal discretionary budget's also gone up something like 65%.
Right.
So as a portion of operations of the government, it's been an increase, but it's not wildly out of whack with growth in the budget. Most of the growth in the government's mission is being performed by private sector today because the government simply cannot get the people in. It's not like they don't have the FTE available. The Department of the Army, I think, has 500 contracting billets that they cannot get people in to fill. So there's a challenge there. And as a percentage of operation of the government, when you look at sort of service contracting, it's really gone from about 21% to 24%, a significant jump, but far from this unconstrained headlong rush. And I think that there's this perception that all of a sudden people woke up and say, oh, my God, we've outsourced the government, which is actually pretty far from the truth.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not new. I mean, they've been outsourcing stuff for years anyway. Even prior to 2000, there's been outsourcing. And when they expressed apparently some outrage, I did not read the entire article. I got bored, as I usually do, looking at the Times writing about government. Which is not a good thing for me to do, admittedly, but they just get it wrong. And it goes back to the piece that they did going on a year ago now about the revolving door, where they couldn't tell the difference between a career Fed and an appointee.
Well, I think the issue here for most people, and the New York Times aside, you know, the article, and there's been a lot of other things written, it's true that the government has been outsourcing for a long time. It's true that the outsourcing and the I call it the partnership, if you will, really began to take off in the 90s in the Clinton-Gore administration and has grown even more under this administration. I believe, and this is a personal belief, very strong one, that the growth in this relationship has been driven not by a political agenda, whether it was in Clinton-Gore or in the Bush administration, but by the realities of the marketplace, that the government's requirements, its mission needs have become so incredibly complex, both driven by Y2K, the war on terror, the post-9/11 environment, and so forth, as well as at the same time the government is facing a substantial and growing human capital crisis, which the GAO has been talking about for years. We are very fortunate to have almost 2 million civil servants who are incredibly committed to what they do. The crime is the government's never invested in its workforce. And it's not clear to me that even if the government had, it still could have kept pace with the private sector. Because it's the way the competitive marketplace works and the available capital to invest in research and technology and developing new business processes. So the government is now trying to transform itself and has been for a decade to a modern, more efficient model. At a time when the people and the skills available to really take advantage of the contemporary technologies and business processes are increasingly resident in the private sector. And that model and that change is very profound. And I think it was captured very well in a book called Governing by Network, written by Stephen Goldsmith and Bill Eggers, where they really talked about the breakdown of traditional hierarchical information structures and all these other factors in the outside world, how they've affected the way governments are managed. And we haven't quite grasped the management challenges associated with that. And part of that is a much more robust relationship with the private sector, which is where most of this capability is resident.
Okay. Well, Stan, I want you back sometime where we can talk about the management issues. And I also want to do a show on the grain of the workforce, something that you've written about before. And I have, but I'm not as deep in on these issues as you. So let's get back together in a couple of weeks when I can get on your schedule and pursue the management side. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. It was good to talk to you.
I appreciate it. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, AM 1050, and we'll return after these messages.
Questions about IPv6? Go to the IPv6 Resource Center on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco Systems. The IPv6 Resource Center can bring you up to speed with need-to-know in-depth resources such as assessment tools, articles, white papers, and other critical information that can assist you in your transition to IPv6. The IPv6 Resource Center, sponsored by Cisco Systems at federalnewsradio.com. Innovation, powered by Cisco Systems.
Fly United capital to capital with the only daily nonstop to Beijing, China from Washington Dulles. You can earn up to 10,000 mileage plus bonus miles too. Visit united.com/China today. United, it's time to fly.
Navy fans, did you know that AM 1050 Federal News Radio is the home of Navy athletics? Cheer on the Navy blue and gold by tuning in each season for Navy football, Navy basketball, and Navy lacrosse. The midshipmen play here on AM 1050 Federal News Radio.
Tune into The Federal Drive with Mike Causey and Jane Norse, sponsored by WEPA, each morning from 6 until 10. Live, interactive, and immediate. The Federal Drive will provide you with the news and information you need to do your job better. WEPA, offering feds lower premiums, more choices, and over $28 million in premium refunds since 1996. Visit WEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Please join Ward Morrow Fridays at 10 for Inside Government. This weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Get the inside look through interviews, commentary from prominent political leaders, opinion makers, AFGE members, AFL-CIO union leaders, and celebrities. Don't miss Inside Government Fridays at 10 right here on Federal News Radio AM 1050 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
This is Lee Hamilton.
And Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history.
And we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens.
Staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history.
And it's also our future.
Get involved.
Hi, I'm Dan Devaney, Vice President and General Manager of WETA-FM. WETA is Washington's new home for classical music, and we'd like to welcome you as a listener and a friend. Join us for the new classical WETA 90.9 FM, where you'll find great music all day, every day. That's the new classical WETA 90.9 FM, your classical music companion.
We're back on AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio AM 1050. Our next guest is Joe Dram. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Great. Now, the general idea here is to figure out where people can network, how they should network, and how, I mean, Lord knows there's events every day and there's producers of these events and associations. How do you prioritize where you go for the companies that you work with?
Okay, well, I started the IT business about 16 years ago when I retired from the Air Force in 1991. And I started out with the various associations as a means of establishing relationships. having access. And if I'm going to prioritize those, number one on my list would be the Industry Advisory Council. Last year and the year before, I was the program chair, and we did about 160 events during that time frame with senior people in the federal government. Now, if you call up and ask, where's your money, and it's just me, Joe Dram, you don't have nearly the access as if you call up and say, I'm Joe Dram with the Industry Advisory Council Program Committee, and we represent 400 member companies. And then you ask them, you know, what are your requirements? What programs do you have in place to meet those requirements? What's your funding level? Because without funding, it's only an aspiration. And then finally, what's your timeline? Right now on the books, in the next couple weeks, I've got Tim Young going to the lines of business from OMB, Dave Winogrand, the number two guy at the Department of Defense, Chris Niedermeyer from Agriculture, he's going to talk on HSPD-12, and then the new J-6, Vice Admiral Nancy Brown, to talk about lessons learned from Afghanistan and from over in Iraq. So that's the type of flavor. And the Industry Advisory Council I like so much because they allow you to have both the military and the civilian agencies.
Okay.
Second on my list would be ABSEA, both ABSEA International and I was the former president of the D.C. chapter of ABSEA, and they have a first-class luncheon series. They just had last week, they had Brigadier General George Allen, who's the CIO for the Coast Guard. And again, he went through with about 15 slides showing you where he was going to spend his money. Interestingly, he had a slide for the 06 supplemental. Where was he going to spend all that money? And he's already made up his slide for what is he going to buy when he gets the 07 supplemental. It hasn't been passed yet, but it's working its way towards the final processes here up on Capitol Hill. So ABSEA International and DC, their primary focus is on military guests. Occasionally they have Dale Myros from the intelligence community, but again, mostly in the defense area. Next, I put a firm, American Federation of Federal Information Resource Managers. Dick Burke is the president there, and he's the head of enterprise architecture for the entire federal government. They have a first-class luncheon series. Then I would go down at sort of a different flavor, GEIA, the Global Electronic Industry Alliance. They do a five-year forecast to industry, which is by far the best piece of work done in town. When I first went over to EDS back in 1991, I was asked by several people, how big is our addressable market? They said, it's all over the map with respect to our sales force. So I went to some of the offices and started asking the questions, and what I got as feedback was, hey, you know, somebody was in here from GEIA just the other day asking exactly the same questions. So I actually I hired an Army colonel out of the armor group in the down at Fort Campbell, and he came in, and I had him focus on that five-year study for about 6 or 7 years. Great way. You get to go in, spend an hour and a half with all of the senior people in Washington, both in defense and over in the federal CIO council, ask them a series of questions, again, trying to elicit what are your requirements, programs, budgets, timelines, and, you know, what role do you see industry in helping you achieve those goals? And then finally, slightly different flavor again, ITA, Information Technology Association of America.
Mm-hmm.
Olga Gurkovic has been over there for years and years and years. And the difference between all of these other organizations and ITAA is they are licensed to lobby up on Capitol Hill.
Right.
So if you want to know what's happening on Capitol Hill, Olga would be my go-to person, along with Congressman Tom Davis.
Olga always provides me with really interesting background emails on subjects, and I'd love to get her on, but she's deferring to their new president, I think. Let's go back to the IAC for a minute. The IAC's been around since, the early 80s. When Jim Ridgel started it, after he actually started Fujipsi, or was one of the founders of Fujipsi in 79. So IAC's got a long track record. But how does one actually get involved there?
There's two tracks. One is the program committee, and that's where I invest my time because I see the biggest return on that investment. And they also have shared interest groups focusing on a specific technology. So if the relationship building would come through the program committee, the technical white papers and the interaction with government at a more technical level would go through the shared interest groups. Let me give you the phone number. This is the main phone number for the Industry Advisory Council. It's 703-208-4800. And that gets you the main switchboard. Ken Allen is the executive director over there. He's been there for several years and is very, very capable. And if when you ring on the phone, you hit number three, you are going to get April Davis, and she is the logistician for all of the programs. They have a program committee meeting once a month. It's going to be on the 6th from 10 to 11 this month, or I should say in April coming forward. And you sit around, and you go through the ones that you have scheduled, the ones you've just executed on, and then everybody opens up and says, okay, this is the person I would like to go meet. And you just volunteer for it. You get to contact the front office. You get to coordinate. And again, getting to know the front office is often as important as getting to know the principal. I've had people scheduled speak at events, and they haven't even sat down their chair yet. And that's because over time, the front offices know that when you call up, you're going to be doing something good for the office and good for their new boss. As an example, we have Admiral David Glenn, who is going to be the new CIO for the Coast Guard. He hasn't come in yet, but I've already talked to his office about getting him lined up. So again, when somebody, one of the things I like to do at the Industry Advisory Council is be the first organization to have the new CIO or the new general officer speak at their events.
So you follow the appointments very closely.
Exactly.
Get on their calendars early. Find a venue. And Joe,
and the Coast Guard. You also take a look at the budgets and who has the largest budgets, and those are the people you focus on. I was talking to a Lieutenant General Steve Boutel last Thursday, and Vern Betancourt, who's his deputy, and they're in charge of the Army program, and the Army is going to do very well going forward. They've been under budgeted for years now, but the gaps in their equipment, the gaps in their training are becoming much more apparent and appearing on the front page of the Washington Post. As a result, they're going to get more manpower. At the State of the Union address and at the 08 budget briefing, President Bush mentioned that they're going to get 92,000 additional both Army and Marine Corps, combination of both, for 92,000, and all of those people are going to have to be equipped. In addition, there's a supplemental appropriation that's working its way through for $124 billion, and that's going to help them get better as well. So between the large increase in troop strength and the increase in the supplemental appropriation and a budget increase for 08 with the Army, that would certainly be a place that I would go look for some follow-on business.
Joe, you mentioned a number of events that provide information to the marketplace and a lot of big numbers you're talking about. How do you recommend the companies engage once they have all this great information? How do they engage with the marketplace?
Well, I think what you have to do, I mean, you have to establish a relationship, and by going in and learning what the customer's requirement is, figure out how does your company meet that requirement for that particular customer. And I would put together sort of a short, this is why it's a value for you to have me come into your office. Mm-hmm. Then call up the office, send over a copy, and the front office will work it for you. And if your value proposition is strong enough, you'll get an office call. I like to, Charlie Crewman and I went to National War College together. He's the Lieutenant General over at DISA now. Mm-hmm. And I think he has one of the best comments to industry for how to do it. He said, you've got a half an hour. If you waste my time, you'll never see me again. He said, but if you have a good value proposition, I will in turn introduce you to my directors, my deputies, the people who actually are going to vet the program or vet your solution, and make the recommendation back to the general on whether they should proceed and fund it.
Okay, hold that thought, Joe. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes after the break?
I'm here.
Great. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, AM 1050, and we'll return right after these messages.
Please join Jim Fliesack April 3rd at 2 p.m. for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This program will focus on issues facing the access and sharing of information among federal, state, and local governments. Our panel includes government leaders from OMB, DOJ, the FBI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and the DHS. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, April 3rd at 2 p.m. right here on Federal News Radio AM 1050 and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Unisys, Cisco, and ITG.
You could search endlessly looking for government benefits, or go to govbenefits.gov and discover government your way. Veterans benefits, Social Security, job training, loans. We help you find your government benefits fast, online, 24/7. govbenefits.gov, one place to search for the information you need. Open the door to your benefit connection with govbenefits.gov.
A message from the U.S. Department of Labor.
What defines uncompromising performance? The reliability that guarantees to deliver superior services for well over 20 years. The experience of serving customers at 1,200 locations on five continents. The accountability that tells you we will deliver your requirements no matter what. That is the uncompromising performance you get with Integration Technologies Group. ITG stands apart as the company that holds ISO 9001:2000, CMMI Level 3, and ISO 20000 certifications, while also being ADA and Section 508 compliant. ITG delivers uncompromising performance as a prime contractor on ADMC2 and as a team member on First Source for Homeland Security, on ITES-2H and ITES-2S for the U.S. Army, and on the Veterans Administration Vets Program. For IT managed services, for best practices consulting, for accessibility solutions, contact ITG. To learn more, visit itgonline.com.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
Calling all federal employees. Are you tired of being on the same boring page as everyone else? Being kept in the loop on everything? Are you ready to preach to a different, funnier choir? Enter the Funniest Fed Contest and win the title of DC's Funniest Federal Employee. A portion of the proceeds from this contest will be donated to the Meals on Wheels Association of America. Go to funniestfed.com to apply. That's funniestfed.com to apply today.
We're back on AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio AM 1050. Joe, when we were offline there for a second, you were referencing the OMB connection to all of this. Explain that, please.
Right. I mean, 6 years ago, I have a slide that I put together for our board of directors years ago. It's called Ongoing Trends in Government IT. And 6 years ago, OMB as a dominant force would not have even appeared on that slide. Now they truly are a dominant force in our market space. The customers truly get it. With the president's management agenda, scorecards, enterprise architecture, the business cases. And one of the important parts here is that after Mark Foreman finished up, Karen Evans could have come in and just said, hey, I'm going to continue the good work he's done. But instead, she's introduced earned value management, lines of business. And there's one that maybe the audience hasn't heard about. It's called a website, expectmore.gov. And if all these other things are for keeping a program on track, both dollar-wise and timeline-wise, this goes out and takes a look at programs that may have been in existence for several years. It has certain criteria, about 15, and they're evaluated, graded. And then the last part in this expectmore.gov website, which has about 200 programs on it worth billions of dollars, is a recommendation for how to make this program better. And that's where you, from an industry standpoint, would go in, check that site, and see if your company matches up with some of these programs on how do I make it better with my products or services.
Okay. And so it's not simply a matter of are there dollars for this, it's a matter of justification for everything.
I had to just to go back at Charlie Crum again. I was joking with him about 4 years ago, when the Air Force took a $300 million cut, and he had an interesting comment. He said, we sent that paperwork over every year. This year they read it. they were able to go back and get a reclama and get a good portion of that money back, but it was certainly an eye-opener. And as you go around, everybody talks about the OMB requirements.
Well, have you ever seen a year when the budget's passed and then there's no additions to it during the course of the year?
It's been my experience. I mean, now we have mega emergency supplemental appropriations. Over $100 billion on a regular basis, and sometimes two of those during year. But there has never been a year that I have not seen a supplemental appropriation. If the budget request this year went in for $100 billion, and it's up to $124 billion, and this is adding in the earmarks that didn't make it through the 07 budget process,
right,
are now reappearing as supplemental appropriation items.
There you go.
Again, defense was very, very lucky, as was Homeland Security, in that their appropriations bills passed before the November election. The civilian agencies passed an omnibus bill for $465 billion, but all of the earmarks, billions, dropped out. So this is just sort of a workaround on the part of Congress to take a bow for getting rid of the earmarks and having them appear in another incarnation.
Okay, Joe, thanks for your time today, and we'll get back with you in a couple of months for an update on what's going on the rest of the year in all of these associations.
Okay, hope that was helpful.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you, Joe.
David, let's go back here. There's got to be some criteria for either a small established company, doesn't matter size, an established company or a company coming into the market for picking associations and venues and then figuring out how to make sure their people are going to leverage these. So give me some bullet points here on what they can do.
To select an association to join?
To join, to attend the events for, but I mean, there's associations for, or special interest groups for pretty much anything in this market.
Right. And I think, obviously, the first driver is choose the one that's affiliated with your specialty. The other criteria is choose one that's not affiliated. There are a lot of crossover. There's a lot of crossover between how one vertical does it versus another vertical, and the other vertical may do it slightly different, but those things apply to your marketplace, and that's one of the things that can make you different. As far as events go, there are good events that are produced by every group out there. So we see those all the time, and it's good for the community when those events go well. So we really want them to succeed, and a lot of times we support and promote those events for them. So it's just better for the marketplace for all events to be successful, especially if they have meaning and so forth. But as far as associations go, it's just more of a matter of applicability to your particular niche.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that I attended one of your events last year where, what's Alan's last name? Canadian guy.
Oh, Barry Siskin.
Barry, God, yeah. See, I can't even remember his first name. Barry Siskin.
Canadian, keyword.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I've known him for a long time, but I just don't see him very often, about every 10 years or so. But he does a lot of training for people, and you have a...
We have a download on our website. We actually have a hard copy version of it that's available by request, and it goes through the steps of how to perform better by using trade shows as a target marketing tool.
Right, but I mean, the result, if you send people to an event, either a networking event, a trade show, the in-agency half-day events that are just, you know, everywhere around the country, if the people are not trained properly, what happens?
The event isn't productive. And a lot of times you hear about people not, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, not getting what they expected to out of an event. A lot of times that can be tied back to the training of the people that were staffing the event. So, I mean, a lot of what Barry talks about and a lot of what you and I talk about are things like the relationship nature of the market. And I think as long as you remember why you're at the show, Joe mentioned a lot, or your last guest mentioned a lot of big numbers, a lot of agency level information. That's great. You need to know that. But then you also need to engage the marketplace and
look them in the eye and find out, what do I do next? And I think the best way to establish relationships is face-to-face. And that's really what an event brings. And if you set your objectives around that and train your staff on how to achieve those objectives, then you're going to have a successful event. It really comes down to building relationships.
Point.
The better the relationship, the better the chances of progressing in the sales cycle.
How do people find the download at your website? Because I really enjoyed Barry's presentation that day.
There's a variety of downloads and usable information at fbcinc.com, www.fbcinc.com, and it's all clickable through the homepage. It's pretty easy to navigate through. And there are some other things as a list that we put together a couple of years ago. You and I with 60 end of fiscal year tips.
The end of FY tips, right. Yeah.
Right. And that's one of our most popular downloads. But believe it or not, the exhibitor guide, the training guide, has been downloaded about 60,000 times in the past 12 months by 60,000 different people.
Yeah, I talk about that pretty much at every event that I host. Because it is a valuable document, and it's literally your catch-all checklist for everything you need to do for this.
Right, and FBC also has 4,000 active clients, so we have tons of people coming in there, people moving from company to company, and if something works, it works.
Cool. David, thank you for joining me today. Again, you can find David at www.fbcinc.com. You've been listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, AM 1050. Email me your comments and suggestions at mark@federaldirect.com. And if you like the radio show, you would love the newsletter. So if you go to Federal Direct, sign up for the newsletter. And tune in next Monday. Let's see who we're going to have next Monday. I think we have my friend Brian Roberts from Croy Connect will be my co-host, I think, for the day. And we'll be back next Monday.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, AM 1050. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, Monday mornings at 10, only on Federal News Radio, AM 1050 WFED, your source for federal news now.